Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Synapse, Think Tank of the Air, featuring influencers, creatives, and thought leaders in the Twin Cities. And now, here is our host, Steve LeBall.
And welcome to Synapse Think Tank of the Air. I'm Steve LeBeau, your host, and we have two global-minded visitors today. We have with us Mark Ritchie, who's ascended to the presidency of Global Minnesota. That's better than your last big title, right? Secretary of State, now you're president. In all the glory and the responsibility that's thrust upon you. And we have, I'm not sure of your title, are you executive director?
I'm the founder and president of...
Okay, well, there you go. He's got one up on you, Mark. So this is OK Ayawu.
Yep.
That's pretty close.
Yep, that's very close.
And so where are you from? Are you from Nigeria?
Originally from Nigeria, but a United States citizen.
Okay. Yeah. And then I looked at your resume a little bit. You've traveled around and gotten degrees in different places.
A little bit in my short life, yeah.
Okay. Well, so you have more degrees probably than Mark and I put together. But
You've made a difference more than I have. I was just ready to be where you are.
Okay. Well, what did it take for you to catch up to us?
inspiration and motivation from you, but... being the founder and president of Basic Institute for Zonal African Advancement, BIZA, is a step in the right direction in trying to catch up with you.
Right. But I mean, just where did you go to college?
Well, I started out in Nigeria and then went to Rome for college, a Pontifical Urban University, Rome.
To Rome, PU.
Yeah. And then I did a postgraduate research at University of Malaya, Kuala Lumpur.
Wow.
In medical anthropology. My college degree in Rome was philosophy.
Really?
And a medical anthropology in Kuala Lumpur, a postgraduate degree. And I came here and did theology and social justice, started out from St. Thomas and then finished up at St. John's in Collegeville.
Whoa. Are you like a priest or something?
Not a priest at all. Actually, I was tracking.
You were
ordination line. The good Lord has a way of directing you where he wants, irrespective of what you want to do. My calling, when I was in Malaysia, the university sent me to University of Maastricht to do intervention mapping. I told Mark about it a little bit.
In the Netherlands?
In the Netherlands. I was there in 2001 studying intervention mapping.
Wow.
Before I came to the United States.
Well, should we go on with this at all, Mark? Is our self-esteem
in the front of
totally
the newspapers, the way in which our world is interconnected, and one of those that we track is the way that diseases and epidemics move, also how healthcare and intervention move. We have this incredible news this week about bone marrow transplants, curing HIV/AIDS, which is how does the world interact and how do we share these benefits to everybody? And when we see a situation where there's a wrong or a violation or a human rights issue or whatever it might be, how do we come together as a community and to tackle that? So, diseases happen.
Yep.
And these days they go everywhere once they go somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
The world is becoming a global village, so do diseases travel.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, Mark, after you left government, you took an international turn. You were striving, and I think still are striving, for some sort of World's Fair.
Yeah, at World Expo, summer of 2027. In fact, we have our site visit coming up this April.
Really?
So things are moving along.
Your site visit now, it's going to be in Minnesota.
Yes.
So you don't have to go too far. Where is this site?
We call it the South Loop, but it's, think of the area, relatively speaking, near the Mississippi River and Minnesota River, where they come together by the airport, by the Mall of America, that South Loop region of the metro area.
Bloomington? Oh, okay. Nice. Well, you could have just jumped right there, East Bloomington. That's where I went to high school and everything. Not quite down to the River Valley, but at Kennedy.
Uh-huh.
So I'm one of those.
I was with students from Kennedy yesterday.
Really?
Yes. Global Minnesota is part of a national movement that hosts in high schools. It's called Academic World Quest. It's sort of a trivia about world events, world history, wow. Modern era activities. And students from all over the state compete inside their schools. Students from your alma mater, Jefferson, among others, and end up in the statewide competition, which was yesterday here. And students from Mayo in Rochester were the top contestants, and they will go, thanks to Delta Airline, out to Washington, D.C. to be in the national competition that's hosted by the Institute of Peace. So Jefferson was very well represented, your alma mater. But I also was, again, so impressed by how aware our young people are of the world. And consistently, whether it's Grand Rapids and Rochester or Bloomington, Jefferson, or whomever, these young people were not only very aware, but also very clear and able to, you know, quickly put pieces of information together. It's kind of a competition around trivia, and you only have 50 seconds as a group of four to come to your decision and
and
hit
no,
the button.
With no smartphone.
They are banned. And there's a few people walking around just to, you know, kind of be an observer, said this.
Enforcers.
Yeah.
Well, it's unfair because when I went there, the world was much bigger and much further away. Yeah. And Kennedy was much less diverse, I'm sure, than it is now. We had one Jewish person. We had two Asians, but they were brothers, so I don't know if that counts or not. And then one black person who was, I think, a foreign exchange student. So it was a little on the white side. And as far as the world went, I mean, you know, we didn't even know much about Richfield or Burnsville. You know, that was our St. Paul was still the big mystery. What goes on there? People didn't travel too much from the Minneapolis side to the St. Paul side. So it's pretty segmented, kind of provincial little attitude when I grew up.
And was it named for President John Kennedy?
It was the first high school that was new that was named after John F. Kennedy.
Oh, that's where the name came from.
So he was a very important story in our nation's history. And did the students there resonate and know that story and have some sense of that?
The most important part is that our school mascot was the Eagles. And so sports kind of took that high spot. So football, you know, Kennedy Eagles, so I was a defensive lineman.
Some things don't change.
That's right. I'm still defensive, and I'm still kind of a lineman, I guess, so that's all goes to matter. But anyway, you've had this global side erupt in you. I mean, were you a foreign exchange student when you were of age?
Actually, I wasn't, but I did grow up in a small town that had kind of a global view of things, and I 10th grade English teacher took us to Europe to study Shakespeare and things. But I have to say, you know, like everybody, that interest in the world came from a lot of places. But one of them for me definitely was my father, who was what's called sometimes a China Marine. He was a Marine in the Second World War who ended up in China in the war and in the occupation of China in the post-war period. And he came home with photos and stories about kind of people starving and dying right in front of him. It was a famine and a huge social disruption. And that gave him a motivation to do something about world hunger. And he, in fact, used the GI Bill to go to school in agriculture in our home state of Georgia. And then he was in the right place at the right time and had technical skills. So he was part of the bringing into scientific work electron microscopes. And so he became a electron microscopist in the research side. And I followed in his footsteps. But he also maintained his early relationships with people that he had met in China.
Mm.
And one of the elements of science and scientist is that, you know, in the search for ideas, for affirmation, proof or disproof, scientists tend to look anywhere and everywhere. And things like the Cold War and the Iron Curtain, scientists were like, well, that's all interesting, but somebody in Prague, Czechoslovakia, has a piece of information about this animal disease that could maybe help save, you know, million or billions of chickens or pigs, and that could feed people, and I want that information. And so there always was in our house the notion that you could have contact and maintain relationships and friendships around the planet, and that your work might take you into directions that make it important to be in touch with. And, you know, scientists used to send out little postcards everywhere around the planet and make the request.
Before the internet.
Exactly. Yes. And coming in the mail would be typed up papers of research that was important. And so that way of thinking about it. But I never was a foreign exchange student, but in my little hometown, we had a foreign exchange student from South Africa.
Oh.
And this last year was my 50th high school reunion, and she flew back from South Africa to come to our little town. And she spoke at our gathering. So there's a big community gathering, and so the different classes, you know, the 5th year and the 25th year and the 50th. And so, you know, we were 1968. It was for that town was one of the biggest. But anyhow, she wanted to come back to specifically say that when she traveled from South Africa, and I think in her mind, and she told in a funny way, she said, well, she was coming to America and she was imagining New York or California. I mean, and
a real place.
Well,
that she was in this little town.
And she didn't know about Nevada, Iowa yet.
Nevada.
But she ended up in Nevada, Iowa. But when she left a year later, she said that, so 50 years ago, she said that for the first time in her life, she began the imagining that perhaps, maybe someday that she could live in a South Africa that was a multicultural democracy. Mm. So this was at the height of apartheid. This was not like going to happen, you know, but the fact that she gained that perspective and that hope, that inspiration, being in the U.S. in 1968 in a little tiny town, but she also believed that it was important to come back and share that so that people could understand the importance of this exchange process and how we treat each other and just the notion of people-to-people connection so crucial. And I feel blessed that Global Minnesota is one of the main organizations that is at the middle of a connection point for official visitors from this, you know, the State Department. There's 400 or 500 a year. We're often asked to be special hosts, a big conference coming up of Fulbright scholars all over the nation, about 100 of those. There's a International Women of Courage, a very special program of the State Department of 10 women from the whole planet who've risked their lives every day.
Our planet.
And so this whole process of people traveling and connecting, I think, is one of the crucial elements of finding the other in each other.
Yes.
And our founders 68 years ago of what he called Global Minnesota Today were on campus, and they wanted to create a center so that students coming from other countries felt welcome, and their theme or their message was, you've come as a stranger. We hope you go home as a friend.
And then
and so it was come always
back and,
that.
And visit. Well, we've learned a couple things. One, your trajectory started in high school. Secondly, you are a high school graduate.
Made it.
We wanted to scratch that off the list. So they're okay. What do you think of that? Now, growing up in Nigeria, you became such an international person. I mean, studying in Malaysia, in Rome, at the Vatican, was it?
Netherlands, very close, yep.
Wow, close to the Vatican. I mean, that's practically near God anyway. And then
it's like St. Paul.
It's like St. Paul, that's right. That's right. Yeah. And then here for St. Thomas and then St. John's. Why did you get such a global perspective?
You know, I don't know how much you know about ethnicities an ethnic group in Nigeria. But I come from an ethnic group in Nigeria to start with. Nigeria is the most populous black nation in the world.
Like 100 million or more?
180 million people.
Holy
and
God.
The census, people are thinking, is being underestimated. It could be up to 200 million people.
Because it's hard to do all the counting.
Exactly. And our borders are not as secure as the first world nation borders. So we still have people from Chad or Niger or Cameroon.
Well, you need a wall.
Yeah.
That's the way to handle.
Let's not go there. Anyway, I come from the Igbo tribe in Nigeria. And Nigeria being the most populous nation in Africa and the most populous black nation in the world has 250 ethnic groups.
Gosh.
And now,
does that mean different languages?
Exactly. The 250 ethnic groups translate into 250 ethnic languages, not dialects, distinct languages. So your next door neighbor could be speaking a different language because that person is from a different tribe.
Hmm.
So the Igbo language is an Igbo, also means Igbo ethnic group. They are located mainly on the southeastern part of Nigeria. And I tell this story because out of all the 250 ethnic groups and languages in Nigeria, the Igbos travel the most.
Hmm.
Talk about what Mark talked about, finding the other in the order or in yourself.
Mm-hmm.
The Igbos have, through traveling, found themselves in others. The story of the United States today about the contribution of immigrants in academia, in research, in community building cannot be told without the Igbos. In fact, last year there was a study that came out that the most educated single ethnic group with Caucasians inside it in the United States are the Nigerians.
Really?
And you go into that group, if there are three Nigerians, two of them are Igbos. And we do not travel to just go and make ends meet. We make the place we go our home.
Hmm.
We settle and become part of the fabric of the society in development, in working against social injustices, in celebrating the culture. We become part and parcel of that without losing the main elements of the culture we bring in to that culture.
Well, let's see. Now, you have like 5 or 10 degrees, so you're kind of an average Nigerian.
I am an average Nigerian when you talk about degrees.
So
yes.
we need more Nigerians. Send them.
Yeah, in fact, CNN carried last year, since 2016, the kids who come from high school who have gotten scholarships to the Ivy League schools in the United States. 3 years in a row, Nigerian kids got admission or recruitment into all Ivy League schools, free ride.
Hmm.
And they are first generation Nigerian Americans.
Wow.
Your parents don't give you an out when it comes to working hard.
Wow.
Everybody's trying to...
I don't know if I should bring this up now, but I did my DNA and I found out that I'm as much Nigerian as Elizabeth Warren is Cherokee, which is hardly, but there's something there.
Right.
It's just like the small, maybe 8 generations ago or 8, you know,
you
grandparents
never know.
Ago.
You never
so
know.
I don't know the story, but anyway, I'm doing my research now to find out, because now that I found out how cool Nigerians are, I really want to be one. Maybe I can put that on a future application.
That's one of my... what's drawing me to what Mark is doing with Global Minnesota. Because when you are so global-minded and you want the world to be a better place,
right,
you're looking for platforms, you're looking for partnerships, you're looking for people who will motivate you, will inspire you. How long do we have to live on this planet Earth? And what else do we have to account for at the end of it than to sit up there and go, I made a difference?
Hmm.
Otherwise, you're using the planet, and the planet's not using you.
Boy, I'm getting so inspired here on Synapse Think Tank of the Air. We're here with Mark Ritchie, former Secretary of State, but he moved up to President of Global Minnesota. So that's quite an improvement. But he's not quite a founder and a president of BIZA, right?
Right.
Which is an organization, a nonprofit founded by OK Aya Wu.
Yep.
And after pronouncing that, I better go to a break right now. We'll be back right after this.
Sure.
Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. We'll be back in a moment.
And we're back with Synapse Think Tank of the Air. I'm Steve LeBeau, your host, and we have with us Mark Ritchie and Oke Ayawu from Nigeria. And we're just hearing all these new things. Mark, you had a question.
Well, I was thinking about the notion of your tribal group being very travel-minded, and you know, compared to the others, and the Igbo population of in the United States, you know, that whole notion. And I was reflecting on the history of our two bigger cities, St. Paul and Minneapolis. In a way, one of the ways of describing Minneapolis was that it was founded by New England Yankee, largely Protestant, largely strong anti-slavery, and many who had been in whaling or international trade or somehow being in those port cities and in those coastal regions and having a global sense.
Yes.
So this was one part of our region's kind of early population growth were these sort of international minded, and it was reflected in how they saw the Civil War and other things. St. Paul, partly because of just how the river worked and other things, was a place where many of the immigrant groups from all over the planet, Eastern Europe, Southern Europe, you know, you name it. And so St. Paul had an internationalist perspective, but from the point of view of people who came directly from, you know, Hungary or Italy or wherever.
St. Paul was where the riverboat stopped because it couldn't go upriver after that. So. Yeah.
So there, and in that way, and Bohemian Flats being named for the place where the Bohemians, the Czech and Slovak people. But those gave different kinds of internationalist perspective or international perspective, which, you know, there were certain conflicts about this in the time of the Civil War, the different views about the South and the North, about slavery. But what it means is that today— we in this region have this really special blend and mix with the new immigrants and the recognition of the international, if you want to use that word, of our Native American First Nations people who, you know, our pipestone was the place in North America, North and South America, where the stone came for the peace pipes. And you can trace that trade or the corn, the maize and the corn that came out of central North Dakota being traded throughout the entire continent. So this culture, geography, the river systems, all the things that brought people here for various reasons and back and forth, and then people coming here and settling here, all of these things give us amazing diversity, complex activities for creativity, opportunities to learn, and a responsibility to then be progressive internationalist in a global sense, in a national politics, in our local politics, right down into our schools, our places of worship, our blocks, and in our homes.
Yes.
And I feel like, you know, we're reawakening some of that now, and we have an opportunity to then push and lift that higher and higher. And, you know, the world's looking for us to take that responsibility.
Well, okay, you're doing two things here. One, you're kind of bringing your Nigerian genius over here, but also you're not forgetting your birthplace. You have a nonprofit, Bizarre.
That's right.
Which is like a pronunciation of bizarre, if I'm not mistaken.
A lot of connections to that.
A lot of connections. But then you made a name out of that and turned it into an acronym.
Yes.
Let's see. Basic Institute for Zonal African Advancement.
Yes.
Are you sure you didn't stop off at Washington, D.C. to learn some language? And tell us what that nonprofit does, Bizarre.
So in a nutshell, Bizarre, Basic Institute for Zonal African Advancement, is focused on moving African children out of the street into the classroom. The question then is, which children. Now, according to the statistics of Vanguard from a British newspaper, for the past 3 years, actually four now since 2015, Nigeria has been rated as the nation with the highest number of out-of-school children in the world. And so the work that BISA is doing is not just trying to save all the children. We wish we could. But what we are focusing on are the children who are victims of child trafficking and child labor and domestic servitude.
Can you tell us how you got the name Bizarre?
So Bizarre is a story that's on our website. When I was in high school, Nigeria calls high school secondary school. So we have middle school, which is our junior secondary, and then high school, which is our senior secondary. But when I was in secondary school in Nigeria, I was born in a bakery. My dad, prior to...
Born in a bakery?
In a bakery, yeah. So we had a bakery business. So my dad, prior to retirement, had been in bakery business for 50 years. And we were all... That was our summer job. So you come back for summer vacation, you helped out in the bakery.
Now, was this bread, or did you have like brownies
bread, and cookies and
donuts?
We didn't call it donuts. Call it puff puff.
Okay, so you had a whole range of sweets as well as the
yes.
And that's a great. Your father had a great job.
Yeah, my mom retired as a kindergarten teacher. My dad was a baker.
Wow.
And so going back to school, a child who goes back to school from a bakery, 80% of my snack was loaves of bread, cookies, and all that.
I want to walk with you.
I know. So my parents would drop me off at the bus stop because I went to a boarding school.
Mm.
And so they would drop me off at the bus stop to take a bus back to school. And I was between the age of 13 and 14. And I would see all these children around the bus stop, either begging or washing feet or selling banana or whatever. Some of them would be sleeping in the gutter because they are tired. You could see some of them being hit by cars. And I kept asking myself, why am I going back to school? This kid looks like he or she is about the same age with me. She should be in school or about to go to school. And I kept asking my parents these questions. And my mom was the one who one day explained to me in our local language that these children are either orphaned, or if they had parents, they are of poor parents. And they are trying to make money on the street to help their parents put food on the table. And on the course of doing that, the bad people in the society will kidnap them and traffic them, or sexually abuse them, or kill them for rituals, all kinds of things. And so they were exposed to all these dangers. They were transported across the country and put into domestic servitude situation. And so with that in mind then, when they came to any bus I was boarding back to school, they would usually beg, bring their hands into the windows or try to sell what they had to passengers.
Because you had a big backpack that looked pretty good.
Exactly. And I had my bread and snack and everything in my bag.
They could smell it.
And the rule in school then was that parents don't give their children cash, pocket money, to bring back to school. The parents give it to the principal of the school. So just to teach you some sense of financial discipline, you go and withdraw money from the principal with accurate recording and all that. So we didn't have cash on us going back to school. My pocket money will go back before me, actually. So when they came, these victims of trafficking or child laborers on the street came to the bus to beg for money, I had no cash to give them. The adult passengers would dash them no bills of money and buy things from them. And I was just heartbroken at how these kids were on the street. Nigeria is a very tropical region, nation, and under the heat of the sun, sometimes 110, 120 degrees, they're walking around. And because I didn't have money, what I was doing was emptying my bag of bread and snacks, just handing them, you go, just have lunch. Because they can't eat lunch or breakfast unless they sell something and make profit.
Mm.
And sometimes they don't. So I'll empty my bag of snacks. Within the hour, I'll be waiting for the bus to move. And then I'll go back to school with an empty bag of snacks. And then this supposed son of a baker will be begging in the dormitory. I'll be begging for snacks in the dormitory, and the principal kept getting reports that I was constituting a nuisance in the hostels. And one morning, he brought out the entire school on the what we call the assembly ground where we did our morning devotions and said, I've been getting reports about a particular student in the, on this campus who keeps begging in the hostel. Okay, Anyanwu, can you come out here? And I was just about to pee my pants. I came out and he was like, if this guy has ever begged from you in the hostel, raise up your hand. And half of the school, this is about 1,500 children, raised up their hands. I felt like the ground should open for me to enter. I've not been embarrassed like that before. And he went on to tell them that about myself, that this guy's dad gives him all kinds of snacks. I don't understand why he's begging from you and disturbing people. And this kind of behavior is bizarre. And being kids, I mean, we started learning English at age 6. And vocabularies, big jaw-breaking words like bizarre made a whole sense. And so people got so interested in this word that the principal used to describe my attitude and started calling me bizarre. The more I thought about it, kicked against it, the more they called me bizarre. And I vowed that this particular situation that gave me a nickname, I'm going to make sure I move these kids that I was giving bread. I will no longer give them bread. I will give them hooks, which is education. And that's what bizarre is focused on doing.
Wow. And so instead of meaning bizarre, it means Basic Institute for Zonal African Advancement.
We have to tweak the spelling.
How long did it take you to come up with that name to fit your...
Wow.
And I did take a look on your website, and there was a video of a couple people that are volunteers or supporters of your organization. And one of them said, it was a woman that said, well, you know, I used to think there's so many things to deal with here in Minnesota, or at least in the U.S., why do I have to worry about a different country, you know, much less a different continent? And she said, but then she went over there and found out there were things to do and it was fulfilling. And that's, I think that's one of the questions. If you want to get global minded, can you do it in Minnesota? Can you do it, you know, do you have to go somewhere else or that's kind of your circle, isn't it, Mark?
And the mission of Global Minnesota is advancing international understanding and engagement. And that word engagement is got a big spotlight on it in this day and age. People want to know what they can do. Companies, their employees want engagement. I mean, it's kind of the topic. Young people are wanting to be engaged. And part of it is thinking about the sort of effectiveness of different kinds of engagement, but also where you are in the cycle of your life. You got a bunch of kids and you're trying to juggle that, or you're getting older. But for instance, I have a lot of interest in what's happening in our nation's immigration system. You know, my grandfather's families immigrated from Germany, and my grandmother's family immigrated from the Scotch-Irish region of the United Kingdom. And, you know, so these immigration trends and flows have been part of, you know, most of what has transpired in the course of the nation's history over the last several hundred years. And so trying to understand what's going on in that arena is something that's on my mind. And so people are, like in our church community, people talking about their experience of sitting in immigration court, so-called court. It's not exactly a court, but it's a place where, you know, people are being, you know, forced into this situation and that. And folks want to know what they can do. And so occasionally somebody will say, oh, look at this idea. So here's one example. Some people in San Diego were very aware of and thinking about the problem of people being just locked up because they're fleeing a civil war or a murderous gang or a situation where their life is in danger, just like, you know, what the Statue of Liberty talks about. And in some cases, they're just being locked up. And this is all over the planet and here. And they realize that one of the issues is feeling forgotten or unknown or just abandoned. It's a psychological and it's an emotional. And then the simple act of writing to somebody who's locked up for from San Diego saying, I know you're there. I care about you. I am watching. It's, you know, in the past we had people writing to prisoners of conscience. This was a, you know, a tactic or a strategy. And so the folks in San Diego have kicked off a movement of people wherever they are, writing to somebody who's locked up just for fleeing a civil war or whatever, to establish that notion that another human being cares. Yes. And so that's the level that even basic interaction or basic human-to-human contact can take place from wherever you are in your life cycle. But also, we have many Minnesotans who are engaged globally. Sometimes our National Guard is mobilized to help in a situation. Our National Guard here in Minnesota, I was on the Senior Advisory Board while I was Secretary of State, and we trained to be the back office for the Ebola fight in Western Africa. So for a year or longer, our soldiers, 700, I think, and then some others train to be that back office. It turned out that Nigeria had sufficient public health infrastructure that it stopped that. So our soldiers didn't go on that particular mission, but others have gone on agricultural mission, people in their churches. We think of engagement in lots of different ways, but we also, I think, are creative people in trying to figure out what is needed. And I'll give you just one more example. Here in Minnesota, we early on began thinking about the special food and nutrition needs of people with HIV/AIDS. And we had organizations like Open Arms and others that were created to provide food to our neighbors, friends and families and neighbors with HIV/AIDS. And there was a health minister here from the Oromo region in Ethiopia, and he saw this and he said, this is really important. Would you come to Ethiopia, to the Oromo region, and help us create something like this? And so they said yes, and there's a whole story behind this. But over in Ethiopia, where they were working on that side of this, they were meeting people from Ethiopia who were HIV/AIDS positive and were speaking out in their community and talking about this and encouraging public health awareness. And this was something missing in our Ethiopian Oromo community here in Minnesota. People willing, you know, under the pressure of social mores and all the things, to speak out. And so they asked, would somebody from there be willing to come over to the Twin Cities, essentially, and be speaking to the Oromo Ethiopian community about this issue? And so seeing how things can be back and forth, things can be shared in our globalness, yes, is a really crucial thing for it to be a truly co-created, yes, future. That's a great one of Minnesota's unknown stories, but it's a great one.
You mentioned the word care, and when I was a kid, we sent care packages, and I don't know if they went to India or China or Africa, but we were, you know, pencils and paper, you know, things for kids. And the big thing for finishing your plate was finish your plate. There are kids in India starving. And then, I don't know if you saw the recent movie Crazy Rich Asians, but there's a father in Singapore telling his daughter, finish your nuggets, there are children in America starving. So now it's come back and forth too. We're here talking about global issues and global, beyond issues, global engagement with Mark Ritchie from Global Minnesota and Oke Ayawu from Bizarre. And we heard about that. So we'll be back right after this.
Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. We'll be back in a moment.
And we're back on Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. I'm Steve LeBeau with Mark Ritchie and Oke Ayawu, talking about how to become engaged with the world, even though you're here in Minnesota. And boy, I remember the first time I traveled abroad, it's like you don't see America until you're somewhere else. Then you get a different view. And I went over to Paris all by myself, sitting in those cafes and meeting people. And And these French people would ask me about the Senate elections. And it's like, oh, were they going on? I never pay attention. These people know more what's going on in America than I do. My gosh, there's, you know, they're very. And then I went to Montreal and interviewed some people with the CBC, Canadian Broadcast Corporation. And I said, do you, and this was in the 80s, so the Cold War was still on. And I said, well, do you feel like ignored in the media since we don't talk about Canada much? And he says, no, absolutely not. We're not worthy of press attention because it's basically the U.S. and Russia. That's the main story going on in the world. It's like, my gosh, they, you know, I don't know if it was a sense of, you know, passive aggression or what, but then you see that the U.S. is such a huge player. Everybody pays attention to us, but we didn't have to pay attention to anyone else if we didn't want to.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that because the attention that the United States gets globally, the attention United States gets globally is you can look at that as a glass half empty or a glass half full. If you want to make a change, if you want to engage the world, that glass should be half full. When you say, I don't want to sound political here, but America first is a wonderful line to use. But America has become the world, and the world has become America through immigration, through engagement. And so it's okay to say America first, but well, when you mean—
I would add trade and economic—
Yes.
You know, expansion.
Entirely.
Not to mention military bases everywhere in the world.
Yeah. Because I am attracted to the world engagement, engaging the world from where you are. I believe that if you cannot fly thousands of miles around the world to make a change, you go to the world around you and make that change. The ripple effect is certainly going to go beyond that. When I talked about human trafficking is no longer an African reality. It's not just an Indian reality. It's going on in the backyards of Minnesotans. It's a transnational crime now. And if you engage the world and you're fighting human trafficking, for instance, the United States is listed as one of the countries with the best rules and laws and enforcement fighting human trafficking. Nigeria, on the other hand, is enlisted as the 8th nation in the world, according to a global index of slavery, with the most severe situation of trafficking. And if America is not paying too much price for slavery, which is what human trafficking essentially is, America is benefiting from the services that is promoting slavery in other parts of the world.
It's part of the global economy.
Exactly. And so if what Mark is doing with Global Minnesota makes any sense, I think we need to wake up to the reality and the positive impact that engagement will do. One last story for you. Stillwater Area High School, I went there I do public speaking, motivational speaking. And
I'm motivated. You're helping me.
I went there to speak on, I was one of the speakers for Amnesty International Day for Stillwater High School. This was like 5-6 years ago. And I spoke about human trafficking, which is what I'm very passionate about, and told the story of what BISA is doing to stop human trafficking in Nigeria, in Africa, and by extension around the world. And a group of students got interested. And about the second year, they invited me back the second year I spoke. The third year, I just in passing, while answering questions, said, you know, why don't you start doing something here? You could form a club here, call it BISA Club, call it whatever, focused on human trafficking. Because these kids who are suffering this injustice around the world are your contemporaries, they're your age mates. Maybe American children will learn from your efforts how to be appreciative of the blessings they have. And it will go beyond what classroom lectures will give you in college and secondary school. It will make you a different person, it make you a different parent, it make you a different student, and a different person in whatever career you embrace. And guess what? The third year, 20 students came up and said they wanted to form BISA Club. We are in the fourth year now. They have 150 children in that Biza club. They have helped us rescue 12 children from trafficking in Nigeria, and they're sponsoring their education. Because what Biza does is go back there with law enforcement, rescue these children, interview them, bring back their profiles here, and individuals and families and organizations will sponsor these children's education in Nigeria from primary to secondary to college.
So it's all personalized.
It is personalized.
There's an individual there.
Yes, yes.
I forget now the previous name of Global Minnesota, Minnesota International
Center.
Yep. And I used to deal with them when I was doing radio in the 1980s. And what I knew them as the person that when the State Department sponsored foreign visitors to travel, some of them would want to come to Minnesota to look at things. And so I would say, hey, if you get any interesting people, I'd like to interview them for the radio. And so I remember when they're still a Yugoslavia, there was a Yugoslavian journalist. And I thought, oh, that'd be interesting. So I go to his room and set up my recording equipment, and he says, would you like something to drink? You know, it's like 10 a.m. in the morning. I said, sure. He makes a rum and Coke. So, okay, Yugoslavia, rum and Coke. And then later on, Murakami, the great writer from Japan, he was over visiting, and that was before any of his books were translated. But they said, well, this is a guy's getting a lot of notoriety in Japan for his books. And so I went and interviewed him, and it was interesting. Even though I hadn't had the advantage of reading his books, I asked him, well, what's your favorite place? He's traveled all over the world. What's your favorite place? And he likes Greece. He thinks that's the happiest place to be. And then I later married a Japanese, and she was amazed that I'd interviewed Murakami because he's such a big deal. And they're kind of waiting, when is the Nobel going to pick him? You know.
And I think you're describing something about the specialness of Minnesota. Those opportunities working with the State Department has given Minnesota an incredible reputation because those exchanges started in the, 1940 and move forward, and they've been built into the system. But Minnesota does such a good job of hosting. We are within the national scene, highly respected. We get special visits with the Fulbrights, or we get special International Women of Courage. But it's because for decades, in the time that you were there, Minnesota International Center, now Global Minnesota, has been so the people who've come here have reported after they've left what amazing experiences they've had, that it's given us a reputation that now we are the place. I mean, there's about 5,000 who come on the official State Department, and we get about 10% of those, something like that. So we're fortunate, and one of the things that we could do more of is what you were doing then, which is using the expertise, the experiences, the life stories of those people coming here. So next Wednesday, so I don't know exactly when this goes up, but on March 13th, Global Minnesota has sort of three convergent events happening that relate to it being International Women's History Month. The woman who's the head of strategy for the Grameen Bank Foundation. So that's the micro lender started in Asia, helping women build their self-sufficiency. She'll be presenting at noon at the Landmark Center in St. Paul and at 6 p.m. at the Central Library in downtown Minneapolis. And in the 6 p.m., she will be joined by six or seven women entrepreneurs from around the planet who are part of the State Department visitor program from Serbia and Argentina and all over. And also in that time frame, Minnesota was chosen to be one of the 10 host places in the country for the specially selected International Women of Courage. It's the woman who's the leader in the human rights struggle of Rohingya women in the crisis in Myanmar, and she comes here to be part of that national wing of that State Department program. So having those visitors here to learn and experience from people around.
And make contacts.
Making it also possible for Minnesotans or anyone who's on the internet to come and have the benefit of their experience. And so those relationships go both ways, and they have the capacity to then go far into the future.
Hmm. Now, Minnesota, you know, for good time, go to Minnesota. What has astounded me recently is just I worked on a project of the Rondo Memorial Plaza, and so they set up different placards talking about the history of the Rondo area, but they also wanted to include placards with the new neighbors. And so I helped to edit writings by an Oromo writer, Hmong, Somali, and Karen. And it was almost the same story. You know, we're refugees. We're like a minority in our homeland, except for the Somalians. We're in trouble. We need to come somewhere. And in all those cases, there more of them came to Minnesota than anywhere else in the world. And it's like, I'm astounded as to why that is. And I'm kind of, on one hand, proud of it. On the other hand, puzzled that we don't know more about these people. They don't make the news except in negative cases.
The honorary consul from Liberia, Jackson George, who has a consulate up in Brooklyn Center, Brooklyn Park area, and very large population, and a community of people 30 years at least here in Minnesota and under great threat from the federal government right at this moment. Anyhow, I was talking to him because the president of Liberia is an international superstar in soccer, and his son plays on the U.S. gold team, and we're working to have him come be here for a match at the new stadium where his son will be playing. But anyhow, he looked at me and said, I've been to 37 or 38 states in the United States, and I can tell you right now, this is the only state I would want to be in. And he was very articulate about this and very clear. And Liberia is another one of those communities where we have a very large number of people. Made a conscious choice that this is the place they wanted to be.
Hmm. How many Nigerians here? Is that a big number too?
A big number, actually. Of all the states in the United States, this is one state where, I should say, of all the cold states in the United States.
The cool states?
Yeah, cold states.
Well, I'm just switching it a little bit.
Or the cool states. Awesome. Actually, it's cold and cool, yeah. I should say. Minnesota is cold and cool. The Igbos have what they call Igbo Fest that happens every year. It's a big cultural event. You've been to one of them. I've seen you there.
Just one time.
Yes.
One time.
They're here in Twin Cities?
North Hennepin Community College. Hosts this every year. And if you want to experience Nigerian culture, Igbo culture, firsthand, it's called Igbo Fest, but it's actually a Nigerian fest. Huh. Come there, you see the food, the drink, the music, the dance,
Anything from your father's bakery there?
Of course, you see bakery products that are better than my dad.
Oh no!
There,
don't let him hear that.
Yes, you know. But one thing good about Minnesota, of course, coming from a very tropical region to come and find a home in this cold region. Begs the question of why are you here? Most people come for to get education, school, and they decide to stay. When the easiest way to answer that is the people are nice. The weather might not be as friendly, but the people are friendly. But over and above that, the opportunity that exists here just becomes very attractive when you decide to tap into it. Whether it is in the labor market, whether it is in social outreach, whether it is education, however you want to look at it, one thing that characterizes the pursuit of immigrants in Minnesota is self-improvement geared towards giving back. You have a very nice playing field to display your talent here and make the world a better place. It's amazing. What Mark does with Global Minnesota, I have a dream that someday, while retaining that name, the governments of the developing nations of the world. Because you say United States, it sounds so big to people. Where do I even start? Then you find this state, Minnesota, interested in global engagement. I'm sure other states do, but a very structured way of engaging the world. I am looking for that day when immigrants in Minnesota, by way of exercising their diasporan outreach talents, will be to bring what they have in their country to make Minnesota a better place, and through Global Minnesota, go back and educate their fellow citizens in their countries of origin on how to expand, whether it's agriculture, whether it is politics. No country is good at it, but you can better your best just by engagement. And there are, like in Nigeria, we just are going through elections now, national elections. We just elected a new president. The gubernatorial elections will be on this Saturday. Now, you have young people coming to say, you know what? We're going to take our country back. And young people means more educated. It is no longer a cabal holding a whole country on ransom. It's now young people coming saying, I am an economist. I am a doctor. I am a lawyer. I am a carpenter. I'm an electrician. There is a place for what I have acquired as education to make this country a better place. And how nice would it be to be in a place in Minnesota where you have such opportunity and a good federal ground to grow that, and you translate that into what's happening in your home country through your participation in...
Well, with I run an organization called Synapse Minnesota.
Yes.
And one of the images I'd like is the old Silk Road that went from, you know, China to the Mideast. And whenever there was an intersection, people would exchange goods, but also exchange ideas.
Yes.
And then when you exchange ideas, that's the source of innovation.
Yes.
So that's where points of civilization would rise up.
Yes.
I think there's so much segmentation in the Twin Cities. We need to make more crossroads between the groups that are here and invite more, and then spark a new level of innovation for the whole region.
Yes.
If we're just open to it.
Yes.
Now, we don't have much time left. I would like to talk about maybe the national resistance to immigrants. But instead, let's take a positive turn. We just have a minute or so left. How can people get involved with BIZAH and Global Minnesota? What can people do as a practical step?
With BIZAH, first is just go to our website and check BIZAA.org. Follow us on Twitter or Facebook. But what BIZAH does, it's not just what it does internationally. What it does locally here, we have a program called Children Serving Children, which we're introducing in high schools and colleges now, where children are hitting the road to preach the gospel against human trafficking. It is a transnational crime. Don't engage in it. If you see something, you say something. We take people, if you are not a child, obviously not a whole lot of people are, if you're not a child and you can engage at that level, you can participate in child sponsorship, which is helping pay for schooling for college kids through BIZAH. In fact, our first college graduates are graduating this spring, people who went through our scholarship, primary or secondary. You can also come with us to a mission trip. We go to Nigeria every year to do this work of identifying and getting these children into sponsorship. Okay. If you have connections in the corporate world, let us know. We need all the money to do this.
That's
job.
Right. I think we're both talking two nonprofits here. And Mark Ritchie. But
again, the internet, going to just look up Global Minnesota and look for opportunities. The events in particular coming up, International Women's Day, Women's Empowerment, Women of Courage is coming right up. And most events are public and free. But also at the end of the day, just being in contact with Global Minnesota with questions or ideas and starting a conversation.
well, I think I need to renew my membership, because I know if you're a member, then you can invite exchange people to Thanksgiving and things like that.
In fact, there's a special place to sign up if you would like to be one of those. We call it home hospitality, and people really do love doing that.
Yes.
And it's one of the most transformative experiences, and people describe it throughout their whole lives. They remember how important that was.
Making global friends. Well, thanks. This has been fun. Mark Ritchie, the new president of Global Minnesota, former Secretary of State. Do people remember that anymore? It's been so long ago.
Yes, they sometimes bring up issues that have to do with things, and I'm happy there's such a strong person in that seat right at the moment, Steve Simon, and I'm very happy. You know, I have a good person as my secretary.
And a good work cut out for you at Global Minnesota. Yes. And OK Ayawu from Nigeria of the Ibu band, and he's here running the president and founder of Bizarre. So thank you so much for joining us here today.
We're looking forward to partnering with Global Minnesota to make the world a better place.
Right.
Big corporations to come and help us do this.
Started here. And also like to thank Dan Culhane, our producer, and mention that this is a co-production with WCCO Radio. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Synapse. Think Tank of the Air. I'm Leo Espinosa.